Thank you very much. It is indeed an honor to be introduced by Mr. Tom Limoncelli. The talk I'm going to give is about employee monitoring and specifically enterprise scale employee monitoring. Now, I do want you to be clear that this is not like surveillance or video surveillance, but it is screen capture, keystrokes, things like that. So let's go ahead and get right into it. I broke it up into 5 different sections here. So I have had a very specific experience with one instance of an employee monitoring solution. It's called SureView. It's something we sell. I'm not here to market. There is a marketing video I'm going to show you because that's the only avenue I had to show you what this thing looks like. So it has its marketing stuff in the front and the back. So just I'm telling you ahead of time, relax. I don't get any, post sales or anything like that. I decided, though, that wasn't sufficient for this talk. So I'm going to give you, if you're contemplating an employee monitoring solution, I'm going to give you things to look for, things that you should watch out for. Some people might think, man, this will never happen to me. We just bought a company, Trusted Computing. They were displaying here at the exhibition. There are only 150 employees, but they've been bought by us. So we will be bringing our employee monitoring solution to them. So if you're a small outfit and you're swallowed by somebody else, this is the kind of thing that could happen. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Ooh, that sounded good. And like I said, I'm only addressing electronic monitoring. So specifically in my case, this is grabbing screen video, whatever's coming out of your video card, and grabbing keystrokes. This isn't video surveillance, so this isn't like, capturing people with either a camera on their laptop or something like that. I will say it, I'm not an expert here. I was asked to deploy this in my 12,000 employee business unit. The company's about 75,000 employees, so we're about a sixth of it. My field experience is solely with that one solution. When I was asked to do that, I went and looked into employee monitoring, what was out there, what were different aspects about it, tried to educate myself a little bit ahead of time so this wasn't just a reactive experience for me. The solution I have is that I will be talking about specifically is SureView. We also call it DLP, which stands for Data Leak Protection. We've renamed the executable that way. The marketing director tells me that I need to tell you that we're not officially a data leak protection solution. I have no idea why not, because that's exactly what it does. It looks for data leaks. This is my first LISA talk. Please be patient. I've talked in front of people before, but I really do care about the Usenix crowd and giving you something that, that you haven't seen before. Is it novel? Is it controversial? So I also walk a fine line. I am in IT security. I've said I'm not in marketing, despite the videos. This talk had to be approved by a lot of people, 4 formal approvers and probably 5 informal approvers. And no matter what, it doesn't leave that process with my own stamp on it, so it has some things. You'll probably be able to figure them out. When I first came up with this, the slides all looked like this first one. I was told these are text-heavy. So somebody else came along and is responsible for all the graphics in here. So anything that has graphics here, I didn't put in here. I have assumed that 50% of the audience is first-timers at LISA. So here we go. Now, why I propose this talk, I haven't seen much outside of marketing literature of people talking about, here is my experience with a monitoring solution. If you're on the LOPSA lists or the Usenix lists, you'll have people talking about, hey, what's been your experience with enterprise storage or migration or VMs, et cetera. I've never seen anybody talk about a direct experience with employee monitoring. So let's take a gamble here, real-time polling. Raise your hand if you've had direct experience with employee monitoring systems or you've seen a talk or a presentation about an actual deployment, and I'm not counting log correlation. Okay, so that's one. So fortunately for the rest of you folks, this is something new, so I've accomplished a piece of the mission. So the issue that employee monitoring tries to deal with is critical data leakage. So you can see up there different sectors. What are the important pieces of data that we want to protect from leaking? You've seen in the news WikiLeaks. That would fall to the very bottom. National secrets, classified information. How the heck did somebody get thousands, tens of thousands of documents leaked out from classified areas? That's you know, mind-boggling to me. This kind of solution, I suspect, was not in place. The leakage occurs primarily through two ways. There's exfiltration and there's insiders. There's insiders that are out to do malicious things. We know about that. They're a minority of the population. We have to deal with them. So there's espionage. We, in particular, in our field, we care about the advanced persistent threat. That is a and there's a nice USENIX talk from 2009 on that. You can go look that up by Michael Daly. But that is, you know, well-funded, aims to extract information out of your organization. So let's look at what's the definition of a malicious insider? This is somebody else's definition. I've borrowed it here. They have authorized access. They intentionally exceed or misuse that access. And they wind up negatively affecting the confidentiality, integrity, availability of the organization's data. So for us as a sysadmin community, we squarely fall into the first camp. And hopefully we're not like that guy in San Francisco. We don't do the other two. But we have people like that on the inside. And when you're a trusted malicious insider, you're very hard to spot for two reasons. This is typical stuff that you do. You insert code into systems, and this is a normal part of your activity. So how can you distinguish the baseline from the malicious? Also, we have the capability to override system controls. We can prevent logging. We can do manual overrides. So these are normal parts of our day. They're not unusual. So again, how do you distinguish the normal from the abnormal? And that is at least the approach here, trying to figure out what is unusual and flag on it. The obvious reason why you care is due to cost. Cost could come about in a variety of ways. It could be your liability, loss of investments, loss of competitive advantages for the most part, brand degradation. If you're a defense contractor and you'd like to get additional contracts, you'd hate to be in that camp of people that have demonstrated an inability to keep data confidential, because you do get scored on that, on new contracts, et cetera. So there's a variety of things that can be done about this threat, and employee monitoring is only one aspect. A lot of data exfiltration is due to honest people cutting corners due to schedule pressure. We see this all the time at our work. People are under, you know, insane schedules, and they do typical things like mail stuff to their Yahoo accounts or their Gmail accounts so they can continue working on it later. Or maybe they're going to travel. They need to work on it outside of the company. Despite our best efforts, they do this, you know, without encryption. They avoid, you know, new security procedures. They cite that, hey, it's too darn inconvenient. This is just what happens in a normal bell curve where you have lots of people in the organization and you're going to get people that just cut corners. Another thing to note, and this is just basic human behavior, if you go out and you see there's a speed limit posted, but you never see anybody get a ticket, after a while you really don't care. My own experience in California with the cell phone law, when the cell phone law first came out, I noticed that most people weren't using the cell phone right away. But within about 2-3 days, I could not distinguish it before the cell phone law. I didn't see anybody get a ticket. The tickets were like $20, something piddly. So it what good is a speed limit if there's no enforcement? So same kind of thing here. If you have a malicious trusted user, monitoring can alert on suspicious outbound traffic. This is an important thing, outbound traffic. You can do continuous logging if you suspect somebody. You can attribute individual actions on that user, especially if it's a user on the HR radar, and I'll define that term in a little bit. And you can confirm failed physical access attempts. Now, if you think about, if you were designing it, what would you try to detect? Policy violations is an easy one, but again, the devil is in the detail. How do you implement it? If you've got proprietary markings, do you catch only those things that are exactly those proprietary markings? How far afield do you go from the exactness of that? What are the threat triggers that you try to trigger on? We care a lot about advanced persistent threat activity, and we have to deal with those specific ones. So a lot of traffic that goes out to sites that you don't expect, that you've never seen before. And again, this seems to have a common thread of what is unusual activity. An almost obvious threat, it's just like the smoke detector in the bathroom of the airplane. You have to deal with agent tamper. People will figure out that there's an agent if you've got an endpoint device and you've got an agent on it, and they'll muck with it. Especially engineers, they'll muck with it. If you have a solution, how badly reliant is it on network connectivity? Can you simply defeat it by just unplugging from the network? You have to have a solution that can deal with that somehow, some way, or mitigate that effect. How susceptible is it to false positives? I can tell you that we deal all the time with coming up with good triggers, and this is in large part the difficulty, dealing with false positives, things that are normal, and again, trying to separate out what's normal from abnormal. When somebody puts up a peer-to-peer application on their endpoint, that's a very easy one to figure out for us. When somebody sends unencrypted mail outbound, that's a simple trigger for us. But there are a lot of other things that are much harder to figure out if that's okay or not. If I'm moving something to a USB thumb drive, our policy is that you can't take unencrypted thumb drives out of the facility. But what about those devices that I'm not planning on taking it out of the facility, I'm just using it as a transport mechanism. I'm trying to take something inbound to a classified area or do a load on a local machine. That's a challenge for an employee monitoring system. What is normal? Do you divide it between, okay, so there's some people that should have those roles and other people shouldn't have those roles? But you can see where this is going. So here are general considerations. Now, I've repeated this from a previous slide. The first thing you have to do is decide what are the assets that are at risk that you care about in your particular sector. So the aim is to protect that data. One of the things that we do strive to do, this is an integral part of an investigation infrastructure. So you try to anticipate, if you're going to have an investigation, what do you normally do during that investigation? Timeline recreation or recreation is an integral part. So you want to have a monitoring system that assists you with that. You want to reduce false positives, you want to have good policy, and you want to have appropriate triggers. Whenever you have one of these investigations, they involve things like this: thefts of customer lists, unintentional leaks. Laptop theft is an unintentional leak. You have to assist those investigations. You want to make sure you're dealing with, okay, is this an accident? Can you tell from looking at the artifacts of the monitoring system that this was intentional or unintentional? Sometimes it's quite clear, but only if you have the appropriate artifacts. Sometimes you have things which are what we'll call leading indicators. If you've got somebody that has just given notice, that's a leading indicator. People who give notice and are going to move on, by definition, have less invested in your business now. So it's just a probability. They are potentially and probabilistically more likely to engage in data exfiltration than those who are staying behind. Now, these are the kind of things we can use or candidates. So if you have a database, is it normal for people to do cut and paste out of a database? There are some people whose role in life is to do downloads to removable media. But for a lot of other people, it isn't. So if you could distinguish between those folks, you'd have a heads up. It's a leading indicator. do you have somebody who's doing unusual off-hours access or unusual mobile storage? You know, maybe it's normal for somebody to copy a few documents here and there, but all of a sudden they switch to downloading or moving gigabytes off to removable storage. Again, that's unusual activity. Imagine if you have engineering applications and all of a sudden you find somebody doing lots of screenshots. Screenshots, again, if it's the normal way you get information from one medium to another, that might be fine, but normally screenshots aren't the normal way to do that. So again, you have an event that at least is an objective, measurable event. How many screenshots are people doing in the job that they're doing? Manual disconnects from the network. If you've got somebody moving from one side of the office to the other, that's normal. But if all of a sudden you find that somebody is disconnecting an unusual amount, and unusual is left to definition, again, it becomes a potential trigger point. So taken, you know, one at a time, they may not be as good, but taken together, all of these triggers start to add up. Also, I mentioned encryption before because we do want people to do encryption when they're transporting, you know, off-site, either to removable media, or they're going to send something via email. But what about if somebody normally doesn't do that? They just deal with normal people here, and all of a sudden they have a high amount of encryption use. Again, if you could flag that, that is unusual activity. There's also, and I've been spending a lot of time on let's call it negative behaviors. This can be used for positive behaviors. Sometimes you have compliance investigations, and you have to prove that not only did you do certain things, but you did them in a certain order. So you can use an employee monitoring solution for this purpose as well. And especially if you have video replay of these events, they're great. They can, you know, they can show that you provably did what you were supposed to do in an audit. So one of the things you want to do is create those profiles. What are the things that you think, you know, what is the profile of an individual is most likely to put an asset at risk? So I mentioned employees who've resigned or they've given their notice. There's contractors who may be in funky positions. You have to look at them. You know, what is their role in life? What are they supposed to do versus what are they actually doing? Call service and service center employees. In DEF CON, they found out something interesting about them, and I'll bring that up. But they're definitely a vector, a weak point in the system. What if you have former employees and you've given them access for any reason whatsoever? The assertion here is that former employees have a higher risk of putting your assets at risk. Do you have technically sophisticated users? Hopefully that is an easy one to consider. And employees with privileged access are community sysadmins. In particular, if you have employees on an HR radar. Now, what would be an employee on an HR radar? So here's some examples. Do you have employees who've had conflicts? This is a leading indicator. If, in particular, if they've been angry or violent, they're apt to do something maybe out of revenge. They'll take it out on the man or the system or the organization. What if you have sudden performance drops? Somebody's been doing well. Maybe they're now under pressure. It could be for who knows what reason, but again, possibly somebody to put under that HR radar. Unusual tardiness, absenteeism, again, speaks to something unusual outside of their profile. They're behaving differently than they've always been behaving. This is out of somebody else's study, and I say it this way. It's past performance, no guarantee of future results, but it's all you have to go on. 50% of the insiders were recruited by outsiders. 50% were disgruntled, and most of them were motivated by revenge. 30% used their personal account. 34% used a shared account. Most used remote access. Most attacked during off hours. They grabbed things off hours. You have to be careful when you're making these profiles. 80% are male. Does that mean that you should watch males mostly? Well, as it turns out, 75% of the IT and math field is male, so maybe that is not a good correlation. I do give, in the slide, I do give a citation for these statistics, and they're not ours. If you're going to do an employee monitoring infrastructure, it's important to lay down a foundation. So one of them is centralized reporting. In any large organization, you probably have that already. Do you do network device monitoring, traffic shaping, traffic analysis? Do you have something that already monitors things on endpoint devices? So hopefully it's easy to plug into those existing infrastructures, and if you don't have them, try to set up those building blocks. You can prioritize your assets. Some things are, I mean, hopefully this is obvious, but it's worth repeating. Some assets are more important than others. You should focus on them. USB and mobile storage, you know, is, you really should profile how that's being used right now. In my area, particularly engineering, I'll try not to touch that again. In DEF CON 18, they had this capture the flag event, and they found out that the weak link was call center employees. They give away a whole lot of information. They're trained to be helpful. That's just what they do. That's what you hired them for. Another indicator, again, in particular interest in our community, if you have high levels of non-business-related activities by a sysadmin, chances are that's an indicator of job discontent and a candidate for putting under that HR radar. At some point, you have to decide, are you going to inform your employees and tell them that you have this in place, or you're going to decide, make a conscious decision not to inform them. One of the lessons, the probably primary lesson I'm going to assert out of this, is that you should always tell them. However, this is a decision point. At the same time, everybody has different laws in their jurisdiction. Some of them may cover employee monitoring. Do whatever that law says you should do. My personal two cents, as I said, you should always inform people what you're up to. You don't need to disclose specific implementation details. You definitely should, if you're going to have go ahead and say, yes, we have this employee monitoring going on, that little banner that you clicked on that said you're subject to investigation is now for real, you should tell them that we don't want you tampering with the agents that do this. Like I said, just like on an airplane with a smoke detector. And periodically, and I do believe broadly, you should report the types of violations found. So if you periodically say, hey, this month we had so many people cited for sending unencrypted email outbound, or so many people cited for running peer-to-peer applications under network, anything that is contrary to your policy, I assert you should announce that. It tells people, yes, we're actively giving out tickets for this. And some of those tickets have higher penalties than others. Another consideration. So measure the unusual activity. Where are your network traffic spikes? Do you have normal off-hours activities for some people and not for others? Do you have traffic going to unauthorized geographic destinations? That's a prime thing for us with advanced persistent threat profiling. Do you have people going to harmful content sites? Has their productivity dropped off? I'm probably repeating myself here. I am repeating myself. One thing is important, high printing volumes. A lot of people don't think about that. If you see that your printers have high volumes off hours, again, that's probably odd. And it's critical to create as many automated processes as you can. It's quickly you can overwhelm the human resources that are brought to bear here. False positives are the bane of these infrastructures. You have to deal with them and try to, you know, get your signal to noise improved. You have to, you know, enforce positive behavior by telling people what's going on. It confirms that somebody's watching. You have to decide also, are you going to let things occur or are you going to stop it in the middle? So it's one thing to detect that, hey, you've got outbound email. and it was unencrypted, it would be a better thing, I assert, if you say, excuse me, we've detected that you're about to send something outbound. Do you really want to do that? You might even not give them the choice. You might say, please encrypt it and resend it. Now, of course, that demands that your solution be able to integrate with APIs, with your mail system, et cetera. So, again, a consideration if you're looking at an employee monitoring system. Here's an incident analysis sort of thing. Okay, so what's normal? If I have two documents within 5 minutes and that I'm putting on removable media, that's probably normal. But what about if it's 20 documents within 10 minutes during off hours? Maybe you can see where this is going. What if it's 20 docs, again, within 10 minutes, but this was done by somebody who's given notice? Add up your triggers. At a certain point, you say, okay, this is a high enough on my scale of things to watch out for, it's worth an investigation. We had a case where we had an employee under an active investigation. He was receiving high numbers of instant messages from the very security office where he was being investigated. This was collusion, and that employee was terminated. That trigger is what led to us figuring out not only the immediate thing that he was under investigation about, but it uncovered artifacts about other behavior that we wish we would have known about earlier. Only you know what makes sense in your world. It's important to realize that this does take a certain resource commitment. If you look at police departments, you know, large police departments have internal affairs people. That's what an investigations unit is in our case. So small company is probably not going to have this, but you need to decide, you know, at what point does it make sense for you? Maybe you're a company that you were small, now you're growing, you're getting much larger. At what point does this make sense for you, bang for the buck? Be aware that if you're ever going to have to go ahead and proceed to prosecutions, this requires chain of custody handling and a whole lot of other things that are formal and not even part of the monitoring solution. As I said before, the best leading indicator of bad behavior is other bad behavior. If you have things like encryption logs that show, this guy's been doing a high amount of encryption recently, but they're naming them certain things that seem innocuous, vacation photos. You know, just like we still find people doing porn, this kind of stuff does show up. Why would people encrypt vacation photos? Why would you have vacation photos at your workplace in the first place? Again, what's normal for you? Did this particular person who's doing this encryption of images, did he recently visit a competitor job site? Again, triggers that add up. Can you evaluate the incident in a full context? And a full context means, okay, if you have full video replay, it gives you the context. Here is what was going on at the time. If you're just correlating events from logs, that's not quite the same full context. You're making a conjecture when you're doing log correlation. Oh, and this is an important point. A lot of times there's suspicion and it's not well-founded. A video replay can exonerate positive behavior. Okay, it's important that at a certain point you're going to be dealing with false positives. You have to cycle those back, figure out what are better triggers than other. Don't be surprised if version 1.0 of your suite of triggers needs improvement. We certainly went through this 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, until eventually you get to a manageable amount of false positives. So at this point, I want to talk about my specific experience. Yes, there's a video here. Yes, it's a marketing video. Please just filter that part of it out of your brain. I'm just trying to show this is what this particular thing looks like. If you've never seen one, this is what this looks like. The slide I'm showing here is the setup. There's a design engineer. He's got access to sensitive information, and he's sending it outside the organization. We do document fingerprinting. We can tell, okay, this is a sensitive document. This other document is not a sensitive document. We can look for source code, you know, source code that's going outbound. I don't want my source code to going outbound. This particular scenario that we're going to show you, the guy goes offline to try to avoid detection. So let's see if this works. And the music, yes, it's a suboptimal decision.
Cyber threats find their way into organizations through many vectors, but at the root of all threats is human behavior. Combat cyber threats. Go beyond data loss prevention to proactive information protection with ShoreView 6.5. The following demonstration uses fictional Defense Technology Acquisition Agency, DTAA, to walk through a typical corporate and government scenario. The following scenario is associated with a DTAA program protected by the cover name Cinnamon Crisp. Cinnamon Crisp protects the acquisition of a highly sensitive radio receiver a government organization requires. 3 weeks ago, ShoreView detected Joe, a Cinnamon Crisp design engineer, posting his resume on several external job search sites. People planning to leave a company represent a higher than normal insider threat risk. A CyberArk software study revealed 71% of people surveyed said they would take proprietary corporate data with them. Because of this, DTAA has placed Joe in a high-risk group in ShoreView to enable a more focused observation. Joe knows the technical details of the Cinnamon Crisp program. He's been in charge of the design specifications for the Cinnamon Crisp device and has authored significant parts of the specification document. He routinely has access to very sensitive data that DTAA needs to protect. Something Joe has done triggered an alert in ShoreView. Reviewing the DVR replay reveals Joe's actions. We see Joe opening up a corporate file share and accessing the Cinnamon Crisp specification document. Even though Joe attempts to evade detection by disconnecting from the network, ShoreView records the action. Now he's renaming the document to something more innocuous. Now he's encrypting it. Finally, he's emailing the renamed file to his home account. It may be against company policy to email encrypted documents outside of the organization, but without ShoreView revealing Joe's every action, Joe could easily talk his way out of the violation, stating the document he was sending had personal credit card information and he did not want to send it in the clear, or something to that effect. This scenario goes to the heart of security measures meant to protect your company. Just because Joe posts his resume doesn't mean he is definitely an insider threat. We can't just take the approach of cutting off his access to the sensitive documents he needs to do his job. At the same time, we need to be able to monitor, audit, and investigate when we have an insider threat. ShoreView enables you to effectively monitor your network for potential insider threats and provides context to infractions. This context gives more insight on whether a good judgment of trustworthiness regarding specific employees has been made, and it shows the effectiveness of policies for right-sizing permissions.
All right, so I'm going to cut it off there. So what you saw there was the investigator's workbench, and it had a series of triggers. Analysts are getting this all the time. When I visit my security operations center, this is just one of the feeds there. So analysts are looking at different triggers, traffic shaping, anything. Again, they're just looking for what constitutes unusual for us. In this particular case, an important thing here is you're seeing full video. And typically what we'll have is, here's a trigger. If we have that trigger, we're going to take the video that we've been capturing and send a minute's worth on each side. It's all configurable and tunable, and send that to the Security Operations Center. We'll send it when we have network connectivity, so it literally will wait. The amount of video that can be stored, I don't know. It's a very closely held secret. I do know that you can configure it. You can, say, okay, here's my compression ratio. Here's how many, what's my resolution. But I do know it's a hell of a lot of video. in the end, and I have it on my laptop here, by the way, so I'm not shilling for something that I'm not using right now. The amount of video is quite a bit. Like I said, I have no idea exactly how much. The way it works is basically, though, I mean, there's some capacity set aside. At a certain point, it'll start overwriting whatever it did before. Again, we're just looking for triggers, and once it's got a trigger, if it doesn't have network connectivity, it will queue that up for sending and wait, and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. I have yet to see a case where we had an overflow condition. This just basically shows an hopefully obvious architecture. You have an analyst, you have the monitored systems on one end. They're all, all the trigger events are sent to this data site. It has to be encrypted at rest, et cetera, et cetera. All the normal precautions, NDAs are signed, et cetera. Analysts view this, and after sifting through a heck of a lot, you have what are your actionable events. I had a struggle to put this slide up. I believe this is a good thing when you eat your own dog food. Now, most of the people here, I think, are closer to my age group. Who has not heard? Has anybody not heard this phrase before? Because I think this is important if you're considering any kind of solution. Does the company that sell it eat its own dog food? In this particular case, we did. So we were definitely going to do this here. In one sense, we were the huge beta site for this company's product that we acquired, and we were going to prove that it worked with our 75,000 employee population. So this talk is about my experience with SureView. We acquired these guys in about 2007. We started doing some beta tests with some corporate IT people in 2008. We had a deployment in 2009, took our lumps, gave the developers some feedback, and did another deployment in 2010. That deployment did not quite finish because all of a sudden the developers came out with 6.5. That's what we were going to deploy. And then they came out with 6.6, and we said, well, that's a hell of a lot of deployments. We can't do that. So they've switched to the same thing just about everybody else switches to, is periodic, every 6 months kind of predictable releases. Again, this gives a timeline. Right now, we have 6.5. 6.6 is going to be released next month. We've sort of halted our 6.5 deployments. Our 6.5 had a lot of good development from 6.3 that I'll talk about. The primary one was that it did throttling of performance. So user monitoring applications are intrusive by definition. I'm going to make that assertion. If you've ever mucked around with a desktop firewall or antivirus apps, they really muck around. Their design is to examine processes that are firing up, every file that's opened or closed. This thing doesn't do network sockets, but it might someday. So that has implications. If I've got large software compile jobs in parallel, we open and close a heck of a lot of files. The one real problem application that we found was with something called ProEngineer. It's a mechanical engineering application. It's probably the dominant engineering application that we have in our company. And this thing, it opens huge models. Lot of file I.O. in a very brief amount of time. And SureView wants to look at all of those files. So we're an engineering company. We have 40,000 employees, which are engineers. That's about 60% of the company. And how many people here support engineers? Okay. So I hope I'm not telling you something you don't already know. If you really want to find wonky applications for some value of wonky, the engineering space is where you'll find it, because engineers are innovators. They look for new stuff all the time. So, well, we have thousands of standard applications, and we have thousands of not-so-standard applications, new stuff that's brought in all the time. And in this particular case, I'm only talking about Windows. So every one of those different applications is a potential conflict point, because Shoreview has to analyze what they're doing. Here's another task. We have a PGP encryption solution in place. If I want to detect whether my encryption, whether I'm doing proper encryption or not, I have to understand how that encryption is done. We do use hardware encrypted thumb drives, and we use generic thumb drives, which have been encrypted by PGP. If the monitoring solution wants to figure out whether you're doing proper encryption, it needs to know how to determine that. So, you know, is there something on that thumb drive that you can say, oh, it's got the properly encrypted file system in it? This is definitely a challenge. We haven't sufficiently solved it, but again, if you're looking at any kind of monitoring candidate solution, this is the kind of question to ask. Okay, back to my experience. So in our situation, we're IT people, we have to get early adopters in non-IT areas, the engineers, finance people, etc. In this particular case, we made a decision not to tell them what we were doing. That wasn't my vote, but I didn't have enough votes on my side. So we drew up a schedule for full deployment, and there was heavy schedule pressure here. The full deployment schedule had to be drawn up way before the early adopter tests were already in. Again, my choice would have been you take early adopters, you get feedback, you deal with that feedback, and then you go make the schedule. And of course, there's no separate funding of labor. We continue to try to deal with that. It's much easier to come in and say, here, we've got at least these piddly hours for you guys to do some testing. You'll get far less complaints. So I was told you can't air dirty laundry, so I am not. This is an important thing to remember. I am not airing dirty laundry. I am discussing suboptimal decisions. This business of not telling people what we were doing was our worst mistake, a suboptimal decision. Engineers, by definition, are very smart people. If you don't work with engineers, I'm sure you have your share of very smart people. People can quickly figure out new processes on a Windows machine. So let me tell you about this story about my buddy Brian. This is a real person. I work with him. I socialize with him. We made a decision to deploy this thing, and we made a conscious decision not to tell people. So Brian works with application support, mechanical engineering support. All of a sudden, we've unleashed something on them which has changed their environment. Significantly, and they don't know why. They're getting delays. Their workspaces are appearing and disappearing and reappearing. Their performance is suddenly, it's just out of the blue. And of course, they've got their own share of deadlines. So they're starting to contact network people. I need you to put in these changes on the switches because we need to try something here. This is dramatic, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so I happen to be in an office, and I hear Brian talking to a peer on the phone. Thank God the speakerphone was on, and he says, there's something here called DLP, and it's like a virus. It's chewing up all this process. At that point, I have to make a conscious decision, and so I make it. I know about that. Let me tell you about that. Now, fortunately for me, about 2 weeks before that deployment, since we had disagreed with not telling people, what we're going to do, my boss and I approached his boss, so my boss squared, and we said, here's a situation. We predict we are going to cause harm. We're going to, break some production processes, etc. So sure enough, when engineering people get a hold of this, what the heck? You put something out here that we don't know about. What are you doing? Their engineering manager talks to our IT manager, which eventually talks to me, and at least I can say, this is the harm that we were talking about. So word spreads quickly. At this point, we lose some credibility. We have to fall into this uninstall, whitelist, reinstall, try something different. The good news, at least with the 6.5 version, is it can definitely be throttled to run quieter than most other processes. So here's how we dealt with things. First of all, log any problem that comes in. We kept an issues database. This is just textbook, debug type of stuff. We use something called eRoom. And this way we could, you know, let people in other geographic locations see, here's things that we're discovering with our mechanical people or our electrical people. Perhaps you'll find the same thing with yours. One of the things we found, now that we've lost our credibility, is all of a sudden people are saying, get this darn SureView thing off my system. It's affecting me. And we would find that it was never installed in the first place. Remember, we've only installed it on a small set of people. It's very important if you're putting out any kind of application, I guess not just employee monitoring, and you get some negative results, to make sure and confirm, because a lot of people will start blaming the new thing on the block. But again, the usual thing was first we whitelist the application, then we go back and do some deeper debug. We wanted to get people back into a productive mode. Some problems were insanely obscure. Imagine trying to figure out, I've got a screen lockup that occurs, but it only occurs with SureView when I've got a Vista user, when that Vista user has enabled the Aero theme. So this is the kind of oddball stuff you can encounter in these intrusive applications. I try to instill this particular methodology. This is nothing magic, but I consider it a very good thing to use, a simple ABA test. First, you know, condition A, you observe that indeed this problem is taking place. You don't just take the user's word for it. You disable or you stop the agent, see if the problem disappears. Re-enable the agent, see if the problem comes back. Indeed, if that's the case, you've got a confirmed case. Now you know, turn the crank on your normal mitigation procedure, whether that's immediately uninstall or whatever. Eventually, there's some problems that we found that we could only mitigate via whitelist. Some we could do with, you know, configurable parameters. In this first large-scale rollout, we've wound up with about 11% of the devices on the network that we couldn't put, of the eligible devices, that we couldn't keep SureView on. It affected it too much. Now, you can say, so, you know, is your glass half empty or full? So you've got an 89% success rate, you know. At least the 11% you've decided consciously, you're not going to harm them, and you're going to take that information and go do something about it. You know, give that information to developers, let them deal with it. Another thing that's important in any, again, in all kinds of things, manual reporting seems to be the something that's left, you know, at the end. And this was too resource intensive to go and say, oh, hey, we've got a violation here, construct email messages about it, you know, inform the boss, tell them they've got to do something about it. So we were able to automate, you know, parsing the results, sending emails. This definitely reduces the amount of labor involved. You do have to decide if you're going to, you know, when you're dealing with violations, are you going to tell only the employee? Are you going to tell the employee and the manager? Are you only going to tell the manager? In our case, the concrete's not really set on that decision. Right now, we're informing both. And a typical example reports we get, and it's daily, it looks just like it says there, you know, DLP has reported so many new alerts, resulting in so many confirmed policy violations. You get a lot of alerts, only a minority result in confirmed policy violations. We log them, we file them. If we get a repeat offender, we go hit him with a 2x4 harder. So my final thoughts, I cannot overemphasize this. Hiding the original deployment was very counterproductive, a very suboptimal decision. So don't hide it, folks. If you're going to do something like this, don't hide it. I talked about the wild goose chases this caused. In the long term, in our case, this is what happens. We rely on early adopter engineers for the next thing that we're going to put out there. And once we lose that credibility and piss them off, well, they're going to be less likely to volunteer for the next deployment rollout early adopter mission. Another thing, we used a mechanism where if you wanted to uninstall this thing, you had to have a password for it, and it was a time-based password. After 90 days, it was expired. The whole point was we didn't want people just continually uninstalling this. All their support people and there was a limited amount of support people who were given those privileges. At a certain point, the people running the show decided there's too many people doing that. We had to push back on that. You really do need the ability to deal with, you know, production halts. You have to be able to mitigate it somehow, some way, keep track of things, etc. We struck a compromise. Oh, well, the important thing is, when you have volunteers and they say, okay, I'll do that, the typical response is, though, but if anything happens, you can get rid of this, right? You have to be able to answer, heck yes. The good lesson learned here, when we brought out 6.5, performance throttling was put in there. This is a dramatic win. I wish things like Symantec would do this kind of stuff too. It basically says, if I'm using up so much of my processor or page faults, etc., I'm doing too much, and I need to have an automated and quick way to dial down the amount of things that I'm trying to monitor. You just don't want to impact your production people, and this is one way to do it. Unfortunately, I am convinced right now that my Symantec, which is also on here and has brand new, huge memory requirements, doesn't have that, and I need to tell Symantec, guys, you need something like this. The ABA testing was a solid methodology. It was perceived as fair, and that's probably the big win there. You know, people could understand it. It wasn't arbitrary. The password protection on the stop and start executables was probably a good thing. And the automated reporting processes, not only were they important, they're an easily overlooked part of the puzzle. You're going to be guaranteed to get this question from people who are subject to this. Is it legal? It's important to know that your boss and your peers, unless they're lawyers, they likely are not qualified to answer this question. And if you have any doubts about it, in particular in my case, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm worried. I'm one of the chief people that's supposed to, you know, put this in place. I don't know what my liability is. So I wanted to get a clear answer. And in particular, I was spurred. There is a case here in California where it is in the court. And they didn't just toss the guy out and say, buddy, you have no claim here. They said, you have sufficient grounds to continue. I don't recall the case number, but it is up here in San Francisco court. It took me 3 months, so I had to persist. This is the answer that I got. It's probably an answer if you're in the U.S. you're likely to get. So yes, case law in this area, law is very sparse. Yeah, it's not that concrete, is it? But this was the golden statement for me. I'm comfortable that the planned use is currently legal in my relevant jurisdictions. In my case, you know, my corporate people are in Massachusetts. I don't want to assume that they know California law. So I had, you know, be clear. Whenever you're talking to a lawyer, just a generic advice, be very specific. And I, you know, my thing was, okay, I need to deploy this in California and in Mississippi. These are the sites that I'm responsible for. You know, does this work there? That's the answer I got. I printed it and put it in three different places and made sure that nobody can deny that I ever got this answer. The bottom line here, though, is this answer isn't transferable. You have to find out what's valid for your jurisdiction. I had to throw this thanks in. I said that I had four formal reviewers for this paper. It's very hard to get information out of large companies, I think, and put them out here in the public. I had to dance with the what's proprietary and what isn't proprietary question. I had probably five informal reviewers, so I'm just giving my thanks here for all those people. And that's it. If there are any questions? Thank you.
So it looks like this product in particular is focused on looking for normal behavior and then alerting when abnormal behavior happens, along with other sets of triggers. In your opinion, what's the risk factor? I mean, we're dealing with advanced persistent threats. I mean, if you have somebody who is aware that you have a tool like this on the system, it seems like a pretty easy workaround without even knowing all the rules and policies you have in place to just slowly work some of these behaviors into their normal workflow, and then before you know it, they've leaked data, but it never showed up because it was below the radar.
Gotcha. So, I mean, it's the cat and mouse sort of question. Sure, there's some... Okay, so again, we have a bell curve at work in a large population. Undoubtedly, somebody will go beyond that, and they'll figure out how to disable it. Undoubtedly, some people will go, okay, so I'll do these things, you know, not throwing off hours, that kind of deal. Sure, people will adapt. Nevertheless, you know, I go back to the porn question. How many people still get busted for having porn at work? It's like, did you not get the countless memos? But they still do this. And, you know, so the advanced persistent threat, maybe you won't be able to do this, but there's a hell of a lot of people. Again, we give memos out on it's important to encrypt this information when you're sending it outbound, when you're talking with your regular customers. And still, we find people that just don't do it. They're under schedule pressure, I understand, so they cut corners. It's an educational thing. So I may not catch, you know, the truly bad guys, but I am going to catch some behaviors that are negatively affecting me. And a lot of, the Air Force banned, you know, thumb drives because somebody stupidly left a thumb drive in the wrong place. So if we are positively affecting the behavior, that's a win.
Thanks.
Lee?
I was wondering if you had any employees that had very, very negative reactions to the existence of this system.
Oh, hell yes.
And did anyone say quit over that? Or?
I don't know if they quit. I can definitely say that my phone rang a fair amount of times. In my environment, we have lots of people with clearances. So there's definitely a reaction from some of those people. Again, it's a bell curve. There's plenty of people who say, hey, you know, I got nothing to hide here. I know I'm working at a defense contractor. It's their machines. I keep my stuff, you know, separate. I definitely had one extremely indignant individual talking about how, you know, I have a clearance for this. Why don't you trust me? Blah, blah, blah. Did we have reactions from managers? Yes, we do. Again, same bell curve works at my place. I think the good news there, at least for me, you know, there was a level playing field. We said, you know, this applies to everybody. And at least telling you, okay, some people will go and the objection I had actually was we had spent a lot of time training people. If you want your transactions, your private transactions, we do allow limited personal use at work. So if you want your private transactions with your 401k provider, with your medical provider, you know, make sure that you see the little lock icon, that you're using HTTPS, et cetera. Well, I'm now capturing your keystrokes. I really do have your passwords. I have to tell people, okay, but I'm not going to do anything with those passwords unless you also trigger me. And so if you do a trigger event, then yeah, I'm going to send that 1 minute plus or minus off somewhere else. And we've heard breaches everywhere else, and how much do you trust your own employer, blah, blah, blah. So yes, we did. So that's a much longer answer than you were probably expecting, but okay.
Hey, thanks for the talk. It's really interesting in actually a couple of different ways, right?
I am so glad to hear that because honestly, I care about you. Even if this wasn't interesting, I would have killed myself.
In that case, I'm really glad it was interesting.
Thank you. I'm going to have a drink somewhere. Yes, go.
So is the main core feature of SureView and other products like this really that visual capture and replay, is that kind of the core thing, or are there other features that are maybe more easily attainable for people that don't have a budget for this kind of product, or IT organizations that are mature enough to implement something like this but do have related risks and needs?
Okay, I'm an old guy now, so I need to parse that. Yeah. There's a set of questions there. Yeah. Is the main feature of SureView, the thing that it brings to the table, the visual replay? My personal opinion is that it is. When I walked around the, again, I'm not shilling, folks. When I walked around the exhibition floor, I found this ArcSight vendor there. It says employee monitoring. Very cool. What do you guys do? They apparently do a lot of log correlation, and so they don't do video capture. I do believe that is the primary thing because, again, if you're going to go, like, okay, you have an investigation and now you need to, you know, to prosecute, you're typically dealing now with less sophisticated, less tech-savvy people. You have the slice of the population. If you're going to go in front of a jury and show them, yes, this person did this, a visual replay, you know, picture's worth 1,000 words and video's probably worth, 2,000. Help me with your other parts of your question.
So the other part was, I guess, are there other aspects of this kind of system that would be worth implementing even if you don't have a solution that includes that visual replay? Because the visual replay part is it's maybe the most valuable, but it's very high impact, right? And it takes a lot of resources and support.
It actually doesn't. I mean, I could, let's see something here. You're going to cause me to do something in real time. So, and what I tell people is typically, here's my buddy here. I can move this guy around. You know, occasionally I'll see him spike up to a 20, but it's really momentary. I do have the 6.5 on here. He does throttle. It's usually single digits, but you can see what's going on here. I mean, it's an occasional spike. I'm convinced, I'm probably slamming semantic too much. I'm convinced that and Lotus Notes by itself is just bloated as all hell. I do get my share of email, and I spend a lot of time in email, and I'm amazed at how long things take there. I'm diverging again. I think a good important byproduct, even if you didn't get anything like this, if you go through the steps and figure out what is unusual for your environment, there are probably going to be cases where you can say, you know what, I can find a very lower cost solution to find one aspect of, hey, that's a real spike there. Off hours activity. There's other ways to find that stuff out. If you've got, Jane all of a sudden is showing up off hours and that's showing up in a badge reader or something like that, that's an existing part of your infrastructure. Going through the exercise and trying to figure out what's unusual, I think, is a win no matter what you do.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Didn't you have like a third question in there?
Maybe. I don't know.
All right. If you figure it out, come back. Okay. Yes, in the back.
So the bell curve implies you're going to have some number of false positives. Now, presumably these, you're going to do some escalated investigation, and in a number of cases you'll figure out, the backstory. Someone's going to go on travel vacation, download some documents to take with
them. Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Sure.
I'm old, I'm telling you.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, so there they are. They're going on vacation. That's one thing they might do.
So after the escalated investigation, the backstory. But it, presumably in some number of these cases, you don't know the backstory. So does this sort of hit the, where there's smoke, there's fire mentality, where, this person ends up sort of under a cloud, under a shadow, just sort of indefinitely going forward?
Right. I think I know where you're going. Well, okay. This is one feed that's feeding into a security operations center. So I've actually triggered some things, and then they've gone and found out, it's a false. Unless there's at least the way we're implementing it, and so really that's really what it boils down to. We're being very conservative with what we declare is a confirmed hit. So there is no cloud of suspicion. Things are decided as either this is a confirmed thing or it's not. And, they could change their mind tomorrow, but I'm not aware of them, keeping constant suspicion things. I did talk before about if you've got an HR radar, those names came from they came out of band. somebody put in their resignation, or you know, all those things come from a different, you know, it just come out of band. So at least the way we're implementing it now, there is, that thing doesn't exist. Believe me, when we're discussing how we're going to implement this, what are the social impacts, et cetera, this kind of stuff comes up. There's a bell curve in the people in the room going, you know, we have to be hardcore versus some of us who say, we have to be accurate.
Thanks.
Okay.
So from the two questions back, I've kind of started the wheels turning as far as, if you define the problem space as identifying unusual behavior, whether or not you also capture video and various other things, one thing that did jump out at me is that CF Engine does include a unusual behavior detection system that could be customized and tweaked and tuned and stuff. And so I'm just thinking out loud here that, you know, possibly something like that, which has a built-in heuristic method to say this is normal behavior, and then, oh my gosh, what's this process that's suddenly using a bunch of CPU that it didn't used to do, or this process that doesn't usually run for more than 2 seconds is running for, you know, 500 seconds now, could be a potential open source free entry point to get this kind of functionality at a smaller shop or with less budget or something to at least begin identifying unusual things happening on your system and maybe start building from there to start identifying unusual things that the people are doing with that machine.
Okay. I believe that's not a question. It's an assertion.
Well, right.
And I agree with you. configuration control systems are perfect for this kind of thing, whether it's a tripwire or a CF engine or something like that. If they're designed to, this is unusual, what else does it correlate with? Tina?
I'd be interested in knowing if you have any numbers that you were, after you deployed this, that you were detecting more abuse than you had before, you know, more investigations from a corporate perspective, or if just the knowledge of having this out deployed decreased any.
Okay, that's a very good question. In the cases where I didn't have a means to detect it before, like unencrypted email going outbound, this basically confirmed some fear, so I didn't have a baseline. I'm personally surprised after, you know, we are sending weekly notices, policy violations to people, they're getting everywhere. And you would think that after a certain point in time, hey, Joe Schmo or Jane Schmo in my group got one of these violations, that awareness would start coming up, oh crap, they're looking for this too. Whatever that reaction is, as long as it stops the behavior, that's important. I've had managers call me. I had one last week and say, yeah, this is good, it's about time. Okay, but I've been personally surprised that even now after it's running, maybe we already hit the spike and now we're down at stasis, but we have a constant, you know, fairly consistent number of these policy violations week after week. And I hope that, you know, geez, this really should start going down soon. They're not dramatic, but it is amazing. That's probably one of our best trigger right now is the unencrypted email going outbound. Mm-hmm. Again, like the porn thing, we've told people a zillion times, we don't allow peer-to-peer here. Quit putting it on here. And we keep finding people doing that. So that maybe that's just a human condition thing that, man, you got that bell curve, you're always going to have those people there. My gut tells me, I don't have objective information, but my gut tells me that we did change the logon banner from you may be monitored to you are being monitored. Mm-hmm. We did, you know, eventually put out a notice that says, yes, by God, you know, the government needs us to do this and be competitive, and we're doing monitoring now. So that's going to cut off some activity. I can certainly say that I had my own share of phone calls that, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to do more of my banking at home. And I suspect there were more people that started to make that decision. There's certainly going to be people that go, well, if they don't want me to work from home, screw them, okay. But again, the behavior that I wanted you to stop was stop sending things unencrypted. So to the extent that that happens, that's still a good thing. Sorry, I've rambled on.
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Going once. Going
twice. Let's give another round of applause for Mario.
All right. Thank you.